If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Hey, John Williams, has anyone ever told you you look like Geddy Lee from Rush? Just my thought of the day. Maybe not after I just got my big old haircut, but I don't know what Geddy Lee from Rush looks like.
I would
like.
Say a slight resemblance.
How about that?
A slight one.
Yeah. Okay.
You're both very talented in different ways.
Yeah. I don't know how talented I am, but I know I can't sing rock and roll or do anything like that.
Bass playing is kind of more his forte. He's a decent singer, but a great bass player.
I do want to say this, though. Cautiously use that you remind me of or you look like somebody.
Right.
Okay? Because maybe you intend it as a compliment, but so often that is thrown out there as an observation without calculating the consequences of that. If you look like, hey, you look like Danny DeVito, for instance. I'm just thinking of somebody who doesn't have Hollywood good looks. We know what Danny DeVito looks like. That generally wouldn't be seen as a compliment. So even though the resemblance might be there, maybe that's something we don't need to share. They know what they look like, and they might not agree. I've heard more often than not people catch that, hey, you look like, and they're not flattered. If you want to flatter somebody, say, hey, you look like, you know, pick the famous handsome, beautiful movie star.
Brad Pitt or something.
But then it seemed gratuitous. You know, it's like, well, nobody looks like Brad Pitt. Nobody looks like Angelina Jolie or whoever the pretty person is out there. I just saw her in a movie. She comes to mind. She looked lovely. It's 11:35. Eric Zorn, however, does look like Pete Seeger. How does that sound, Eric?
Pete Seeger. You know, people have told me that I look like Greg German, the guy who played Richard Fish on the TV, Ally McBeal.
On what show?
Ally McBeal, that show about the Callista Flockhart's vehicle, maybe 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I never knew exactly how to take that. I mean, he was an okay looking guy, but he certainly wasn't a dreamboat. Well, I guess that's fair, right?
Eric, if you look in the mirror, maybe you're no dreamboat. How about that? I don't know what to tell you.
I would say that that's probably consensus.
And none of us is. Eric is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, the weekly newsletter containing commentary, comedy, and more. Search for the Picayune Sentinel online, or you just email ericzorn@gmail.com, and he'll sign you up. Give him a little bit of money. He'll get you in the premium edition of that each week. Eric, if I may, I just want to finish up with a few observations about ketchup and eggs. The price of eggs is pretty high right now. And Heinz Ketchup has just said that the ketchup should be stored in the refrigerator, not in a cupboard, not at room temperature, but in the fridge. John, I'm a cupboard. My wife is a fridge. Whoever uses the ketchup last is where it goes. John, what about butter? Fridge or not? Butter can stay out room temp, if I'm not mistaken. Although I did leave some butter out recently for about 2 weeks. And when I used it, it was bad and we had to throw the food away. John, the refrigeration of ketchup in restaurants isn't an issue because the rate of consumption replenishment is so much greater than your home consumption. Where are you, Eric?
With ketchup, we refrigerate it because we don't use it very often, only on hot dogs. I'm kidding. we don't use ketchup. We don't use ketchup that much. I grew up in a house where my mother refrigerated the peanut butter, which, if you want to know why I am the way I am, that's why.
Yeah.
My mother refrigerated peanut butter, which is just unthinkable, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it makes the peanut butter useless. You can't. It's now inapplicable. That would be inapplicable.
My childhood was filled with shredded bread, and it was just, it's a nightmare. My therapist and I talk about it every week.
Maybe that should be your next unpopular opinion in your weekly newsletter, the Picayune Sentinel. You do now post unpopular opinions and let people comment on them. For instance, is there no purpose for a local weathercaster? Should you play the Super Bowl on a Saturday? Maybe you should refrigerate your ketchup. I'll bet you'd catch some flack for that, my friend.
I'll put that on. I'm always looking for unpopular opinions. I don't know which one is popular. What can you tell me from your unscientific survey of listeners? Which one is the most popular?
Well, now that you mentioned it, I don't know. It seems to me like most people would say it should be in the fridge. At home, it's in the fridge. At my house, it's in the fridge.
Well, I invite anyone who believes it to be left out to write to me, and I'll post their opinion as the unpopular one, and then we'll vote on it.
Eric Zorn at gmail.com.
I think Eric Zorn at Gmail. I think I told you that I got clobbered last week on the local weathercaster issue. I'd asked readers, because there was a Byron Allen's a couple dozen stations around the country decided they're going to just centralize their weather forecasters in Atlanta using the Weather Channel technology. And so we don't need, every station doesn't need its own Tom Skillin at Miller. And we'll just have some of those go to the weather center. And this was reacted to extremely poorly by my readers. And my readers are a very smart bunch. And they said, 85% of them said, no, we like our local weather forecaster.
Yeah.
We think that the local meteorologist knows all the little ins and outs we need to know about what the weather's going to do. And so I lost that one.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
No, go ahead. I was just saying that this week I am asking whether we should move the Super Bowl to Saturday, because Super Bowl parties always go, well, I got to get home. Oh, yeah, I know it's the third quarter. We get the kids to bed. Oh, I got to get up early for work. It's on a Sunday. Why shouldn't it be on a Saturday? There's nothing else going on Super Bowl Saturday, right? I mean, the college football season is long over, and baseball season hasn't started yet. And I mean, I guess there are a few hockey and basketball games, but Saturday makes sense to me. And the NFL has categorically rejected that. But there has been talk about moving it back 1 week so that it's on President's Day weekend. And that kind of sense to me that if you moved it back a week, most people, I don't know, most people, but certainly a lot of people, certainly school children, get Monday off. So you could have both the best of both worlds, a Sunday night telecast plus no school the next day. So,
yeah, I'm all for having it on Saturday. I take your point. By the way, this past Sunday with no NFL or college football games, and I'm not a big NBA fan. There was a college basketball game for me, but mostly there wasn't a lot of college basketball. This past Sunday was the loneliest Sunday. We didn't have our TV on, not until 5:30 at night, to watch the basketball game, you know, my local team. It was weird. It was very strange on Sunday to not have a big time sporting event to dial in, you know?
Yeah, it's a very strange little gap in the calendar. And I think this is the week right around now that Sports Illustrated puts out its swimsuit issue.
Yeah,
is that right?
Right.
I mean, I sound like I'm being coy about it, but I've stopped paying attention to the swimsuit issue as Sports Illustrated has kind of faded from consciousness.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're still, are they still doing it?
Last year or the year before, they did like Martha Stewart or somebody. They are doing more than just featuring the youngest and tallest and curviest models. It's become almost a statement as much as it is a pictorial. At least on the cover. That's just off the top of my head observation. But you're right, it's sort of a pop currency seems to have gone way down in the last few years, that's for sure.
I'm pretty curious about whether the Super Bowl this weekend is going to be highly viewed. These two teams have not captured America's imagination. I think people are pretty sick of the Kansas City Chiefs by now.
Yep.
I've just heard a lot of Chief fatigue. And the Eagles are just not, I mean, they've been in the Super Bowl, what? They were 2 years ago, the same matchup occurred, right?
Yeah,
and then it seems like the Eagles are sort of a perennial team in the Super Bowl. And just kind of nothing to be excited about. I would have been excited about the Bills or the Lions. My gosh, the Lions would have been a great story. But there's just they're not any really great storylines in the Super Bowl.
Winning their conference championship would have been a great story, too. And that almost happened. Had the Bills been in it this year, that would have been a lot of fun, too. Didn't happen. So, yeah, but who knows? Maybe it's going to be a 43-44 game, and it'll be a last-second touchdown, and you know, it'll look like fiction to us here in Chicago, but at least that'll be something to see. So I'm rooting for that. And honestly, I think most of us, excepting for the two cities that are involved, view the game as a party and less a game. So maybe it doesn't even matter, right, Eric?
Yeah, it doesn't. Although, on the other hand, you know, it used to be, well, you got to watch it for the commercials. But nearly all the commercials are on YouTube already, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And the commercials have gone down in sort of their in the popular culture as well. I haven't even seen a lot of the Super Bowl commercials. Sometimes they would preview them on TV the week before. They would flood the internet. I'm sure a lot of you have seen some of them, but it's not. I haven't seen the Clydesdales kicking a football this week. So, yeah, whatever happened to that? And 312, Eric Zorn, this is for you, said, please discuss the topic of people who ask their guests to take their shoes off in their home. I could not fathom asking a grown adult to take off their shoes. It's dumb and it's rude. Them's fighting words. When we go to people's houses, one of the first questions we discuss is shoes on or off. Eric, your thoughts. Go.
I don't have any problem with that. We're shoes on people, but we certainly understand and respect the it actually makes sense, right? Because you don't want to track in all that outside dirt. We're just outside dirty people, I guess. We don't have a problem with shoes on, but like I said, I don't have any problem wearing my socks in someone's house as long as they keep the temperature up.
I don't want to wear my socks in anybody's house, including my own. When I get up in the morning, I put on my socks and I put on my shoes. I emerge from the bedroom with my shoes laced up. It's like I slept in them. Eric, since we last spoke, there was that crash in Washington, D.C., and you wrote a little bit about that. I don't know. I hate to even ask this, but I'm just going to ask it because you wrote about it. Do we know about the description of the persons involved, the helicopter pilot, the airline pilot, and the person that was navigating their descent and ascent from air traffic control? Do we know their race, their gender, their orientation? Do we know those things per se?
I think all we know for sure is that one of the three military personnel on the Black Hawk helicopter was a woman who was apparently, you know, in the top 20% of her class. When she trained in the helicopter, we don't yet know whose fault it was, whether it was the air traffic control people's fault or whether it was the fault of the Black Hawk helicopter for being too high, which is apparently, you know, but why were they that high? Who instructed them to be that high? I mean, I think it's just a lot of questions that at least we in the lay public have about this. Now, there are certainly people who know more about this, but who perhaps aren't yet telling us about it, but what I wrote about today was I thought that when President Trump came out and blamed DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion hiring practices on this crash, I thought that was one of the most appalling things I've ever heard him say. And he said a lot of appalling things. But essentially what he was saying was that he thought that this crash was probably caused by someone who was not a white man. And that person is inherently not qualified to be doing their job and probably made that mistake. I don't know any other way of reading that accusation. And they said, well, how do you know that? And he said, well, it's common sense. And my answer is that his response is just common racism or sexism, that you can't say that the fault before you even know what caused the crash exactly, that it was because a person of color or a woman or a disabled person who was hired, given preferential treatment in hiring, perhaps, caused the crash. Just to say that as a wild guess, I mean, even if he turns out to be right, which I would be surprised if he were, having that initial reaction, it would be like if you went out to your garage in your, you know, by your house and you found your bike stolen and you immediately blamed it on a minority group. Say, oh, it must be those, you know, those Polish people, or must be, you know, any ethnic group, any religious group must have stolen my bike. And if it turns out that it was that person, that doesn't mean that it was right for you to conclude that. That's bigotry right there, whether or not you're right. And I just thought that this reflexive influence, you know, instinct, I should say, to blame this on.
Well, you said you can't.
Not a white man.
I'm reading from your own post, Eric, and you do quote what J.D. Vance said. So here's the vice president's take on what the president said. The president, this is J.D. Vance speaking, the president made very clear that he was not blaming anybody, but he was being very explicit about the fact that DEI policies have led our air traffic controllers to be short-staffed. That is a scandal. Thankfully, it's a scandal the president has stopped. Let's just say the person at the controls did not have enough staffing around him or her because we were turning people away because of DEI reasons. It has been reported that the control tower should have had two people on those flights. They had one.
They had one, but that was because the supervisor had let somebody else go home early. Yeah. In the tower, uh-huh. is my understanding.
You know, me too.
Yeah, there's one person now, and whether that person, whether that's routine, I don't know, and whether even that was caused by the person in the traffic control tower, we don't know either. Also, what Vance said about DEI policies have left our air traffic controllers short-staffed is just not true. I mean, it's just not the case. I've seen people from the FAA quoted about this, saying that they have a problem getting qualified applicants. They're not just letting people in, and if they were letting people in who weren't qualified, they would probably be better staffed, right? That explanation didn't make any sense to me. Mm. And even if that's the case, then it doesn't mean that necessarily it was the problem. It was the fault of the control tower. It might have been that the Black Hawk helicopter. A pilot had gone rogue, decided to fly a little higher. Or it might be that the pilot of the American Airlines jet made a mistake. We don't know yet. And sort of to for him to say the president wasn't blaming anybody, well, of course he was blaming DEI. When you blame DEI, you're saying that it's because we are focusing on diversity.
I think he was blaming Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Pete Buttigieg. I mean, he did call them out by name. That was the thing where, as we were listening to it, and he started to do that, I almost could not believe my ears. I knew that would be consistent with his thinking, his rationalization, but it was hours afterwards, not half of the bodies were recovered. That, to me, was the most scandalous part of that.
Yeah, I mean, there still are some bodies in the water, but most of them are still in the water when he comes out and he starts fixing blame and playing politics. I would add, though, that I didn't care for some of the way that the Democrats responded to this by talking about how, well, they had let the FAA commissioner go a week earlier and things like and trying to affix blame back on the Trump administration, which I don't think was appropriate either. And this is one of those things where you really need to figure out what happened and look forward. And then if we want to assign blame, fine, but we want to figure out how can we make sure this can't happen again. Now, how J.D. Vance and the president and president spokesman can get up and say, but don't worry, air traffic is still safe. We still urge people to fly. If they're saying that the air traffic control system is staffed by incompetent
people. I think
people.
There are things like the very, very rare plane crashes with fatalities. Remember, you're three times more likely to win the Powerball than you are to die in a plane crash, even as you factor in what happened in Washington, D.C. There are some things that happen, and the president or the transportation secretary, sometimes even the principals involved, could not prevent it from happening. And I include in this hurricane damage and wildfires in California, which we are talking about whether or not the governor or the president or local officials made good decisions or bad decisions. I think Southern California was going to burn no matter who was in any office. And hurricanes going to hit Florida and people are going to get wiped out no matter who is in office. You just can't prevent some of these things. And occasionally a plane crash is going to happen and the outgoing administration or even the incoming administration have nothing to, there's nothing within their power to prevent some of these things from happening.
Right. But we can learn from some of these tragedies. And, you know, for instance, building codes in Florida, the hurricane zones and flood zones and in fire zones, we can learn from them going forward. And again, you know, they'd say, well, there were fire trucks that were not under good repair in Los Angeles and we needed more fire trucks. They might have saved a few homes, but you saw the scope of the devastation there. It wasn't a matter of lacking a few fire trucks or not having quite enough water to fight the fires. That was a completely unpreventable disaster, and the fire officials out there said so.
You and I did not get to Brandon Johnson's idea. Now he's back on the let's tax the million-dollar homes. We'll have to talk about that on the Mincing Rascals podcast. We will do that tomorrow. It'll drop tomorrow around 5 o'clock or so. It's a panel of smart people who care about Chicago. I get to MC, and they do the waxing, and it's, I think, a really good podcast. Wherever you get it, look for the Mincing Rascals, including WGNRadio.com. I'll talk to you about that tomorrow, Eric.
Thanks, John. We'll talk then.
He publishes the Picayune Sentinel. You can email Eric Zorn at gmail.com to get a free copy.